Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 this morning. And, it's Monday. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And that, as you hear, is the theme for our movie review segment. And we review all the new movies every Monday morning, and we catch up on the box office and get some stuff from our guys, Colin and Eric. And Colin Suter, we welcome Colin Suter back this morning. Jim Leskowski, I want to thank Jim for doing a really great job. Colin took some time off, and Jim was filling in for him for the past couple of months and did a really good job. But Colin is back, and so is Eric, and he's here as well. And it's time to talk about the movies and box office and everything else. And here is Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Hello. And Colin, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you. Nice Good to be back.
Nice to have you back. I really appreciate you coming back, man. And how was your time off?
It was very well spent and much needed.
Okay. All right. Well, you're back now, right? It's all good.
I am back.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
all good.
Welcome back. We missed you, Colin. Jim did a nice job while you were away.
You did. Yeah. I was listening.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. Well, listen, Colin, I want to catch up with you a little bit. We've only got a couple of movies to review this week. We've only got three to review. And by the way, none of us saw, this is the second week in a row, that none of us saw the big Gerard Butler movie.
Should make that a trend.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, there a lot of good movie stuff happened over the weekend. A lot of good movie stuff happened over the weekend. So, you know, why taint it with a Gerard Butler movie where London Bridge falls down?
You can just say a Gerard Butler movie.
Yeah.
You can just say that.
I know. It's just, well, it's 2 weeks in a row. And we'll talk about the box office, too, Eric.
Yeah.
For these films that have back-to-back Gerard Butler stuff. We'll get to that a little bit later on. I want to catch up a little bit with Colin. You know, over the couple of months, I'm assuming that you still did go to movies.
I went to two.
Okay, what did you see?
You know, saw Hail Caesar and The Witch.
Okay.
Those were the two that I went to see.
All right. Well, what did you... I did not like Hail Caesar. Eric loved it. Jim was mixed on Hail Caesar as well. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I'm a little more towards Eric. I don't quite love it, but I like it a lot. I thought it was just, you know, it's sort of in that burn after reading mode of Coen Brothers, where they're just kind of like getting some gags off their chest and just kind of, you know, it's kind of a free form of ideas in a big pot, and yet somehow tying it together with Barton Fink of all movies.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Okay. I didn't hate it. For about 40 minutes, I thought it was phenomenal. And then I just thought it kind of lost focus. And it was just kind of all over the place, and I was not with it. But I will tell you this, and Eric, we talked about this. It does have the funniest scene that I've seen in a movie, and I don't know how long. The scene where...
That it were so simple.
Oh, my God, Colin. I'm telling you, I don't know. I swear to you, I was crying. I was doubled over. I couldn't catch my breath. It's one of the funniest scenes that the Coen brothers have ever put to film. And Ralph Fiennes is hilarious in that scene.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've always been saying this. He really should do more comedy.
Between this and the Budapest, I mean.
I forgot about that. I keep thinking about this and in Bruges.
He should do more Wes Anderson comedies.
Well, he was hilarious in Grand Budapest. He was hilarious in that. And in Bruges, come on. He was fantastic in that.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other one you saw, which is The Witch, which Eric didn't like. Of the 2 months that you've been gone, that is by far my favorite movie of the 2 months that you've been away. Colin, where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I really dug The Witch. I'm kind of surprised that Eric didn't like it, but I really thought it was some amazing filmmaking. And as somebody who, you know, made a film about a folk tale, I found it quite, you know, it's right up my alley away.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, how come people aren't taking more from American folklore and folk tales and doing something interesting with it?
Mm-hmm.
The performances are great. It's my kind of atmosphere for a horror film. very creepy, very weird. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah, I am too. And as one of the big discussions that we had when we talk about the box office segment, Eric, that we talked about was the fact that movie was actually released in 2,200 screens. I don't know how. The fact that I saw that movie in Skokie in the same building that houses a Buffalo Wild Wings is really surrealistic.
I mean, in a way, it's not, though. I mean, they look at the formula. They're looking at the formula for It Follows, and and how independent horror films can sometimes just break out unexpectedly. And I think they were, they had another one of those on their hands, but given the response out of Toronto. And there was some hype build up around it, but. They did jump the gun, definitely, on it. But I think they thought, well, why don't we just – we know we're going to get that anyway. Let's just do it on the first weekend.
Yeah.
It just didn't quite happen.
You know, I mean, It Follows is a much more accessible movie than The Witch, I think. I mean, as unusual as It Follows is, it's a lot more – well, I mean, just like there's a lot more bang for your buck in It Follows than there is in The Witch. The Witch requires a lot of, like, patience and, you know, attention. And not that I'm discounting It Follows, because It Follows was one of my favorite films of last year. I'm just saying that the commercial viability for It Follows seems to be much easier to understand than The Witch.
I guess. It's such a tough call, though. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the guy who'd make that decision, because I think It Follows is... accessible, yeah, but really hard to describe to people. Whereas I think The Witch is easier to describe to people, but harder for people to grasp. So it's like, man, I don't know. Where's the middle ground there? Yeah. But yeah.
All right. Well, those are the two that you saw. And I'm trying to remember if you missed anything else, Eric. Was there anything? Because for me, it was all about The Witch. That was the
Kung
one
Fu
that really.
Panda 3.
Oh, Kung Fu Panda. Yeah, that was okay.
Made money, I'm just saying.
I like the first two. I'll catch up with it eventually.
And what about The Boy? You didn't go see The Boy, Colin?
It's in my Netflix queue. I'll get to it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wait a minute. You didn't see Deadpool, the biggest movie ever made in the history of motion pictures?
I have not yet seen Deadpool.
Okay.
I know. Shocker. It's a comic book movie. I didn't go see that. Yeah. I know.
I'm in the minority, man, Colin. I'm in the minority. I did not like it. I'd be really curious to see what you thought of it. Really curious. So, all right. Well, also in that time that you were gone, and by the way, you picked the best 2 months to go.
If you're going to choose 2 months, I mean, wouldn't you have gone with that?
January and February? Yeah. Absolutely. And then I actually thought that the Terrence Malick movie was opening this weekend. So I was like, you purposely timed it so that you could come back to talk about a Terrence Malick movie.
Believe me, I never follow release dates. And I never know what's coming out from 1 week to the next until I see Eric's email.
Next week the Malick movie opens. So
yeah,
but also in those 2 months the Oscars happened. I'm assuming you did watch the Academy Awards. And
of course.
What were your general thoughts on the awards and the show itself?
Not much different from yours. I mean, I thought the show clipped along pretty nicely. I mean, if you noticed that there were no, like, big tribute moments, it's like, we're going to do a tribute to cinematographers. We're going to do a tribute to, this, that, or the other. And I was like, good, we don't need that. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it going. I thought Chris Rock did a great job. After a while, the race stuff did start to wear thin. And I was fine with some of the upsets. I was fine with Spotlight winning Best Picture. I was fine with the Ex Machina upset.
Yeah.
I was actually okay with that.
Yeah.
Other than Inarritu winning director, there weren't too many times where I was going, oh, man. Stallone. I would have liked to have seen Stallone get up. So, yeah, I mean, not much different from yours. I can't complain too much. Mad Max won 6 Academy Awards.
I know, man.
Who saw that coming, 6 months ago?
Isn't that crazy? Every time it won, I went, oh, my God.
It's great. Anytime the Oscars get over their genre bias, and start awarding movies with mutants and car chases as something as legitimate art, I'm fine with it. It's great, you know.
And as I was watching it, Colin, I was telling you guys about this before, but as I was watching it, and when Mad Max kept winning over and over again, I was brainwashed into thinking Miller was going to win.
Oh, I was at a party, and we were all kind of looking at each other, saying, "Yeah, this, look what's happening. This is great."
And I was just like, "And you weren't, Eric, at any time?"
Oh yeah, no. I was texting Colin. I was texting both of you guys during the show.
Yeah.
And by the time it hit like its fifth award, I'm like, this Miller thing could happen.
I know, man.
I thought it was gonna lose best picture. It was gonna pull a Gravity. It was like Cuarón won, but they still gave it to 12 Years a Slave, and I thought they were gonna give it to Revenant, and they didn't, which I was happy about. But
there was that time until I was really like, oh man, oh, this is going to be the coolest, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, and then it was Iñárritu, so, which is fine because he directed the hell out of The Revenant, you know what I mean? He did. So, all right, anyway, so those are the Oscars. We wanted to catch up with Colin a little bit on that, and so Colin, you're back. We're reviewing movies, and we're going to do that. We're going to take a break, okay, guys?
Mm-hmm.
And welcome back, Colin. You were missed.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Eric, hang on. Colin, hang on. And we'll take a break. And we got the news coming up. And then right after the news, we'll jump into the new movies. We will also talk about box office. And Eric will give us a quick preview on what movies he's planning on hoping to see at the South by Southwest Film Festival, which he is traveling to Austin, Texas next week. And we'll have live reports from there. Okay. We'll take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN News next. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews are happening right now. We're going to dive into the Moo movies, and we'll talk about the box office and much more. Coming up a little bit later on, my dad is going to call in and tell a joke. And that show that we, Dan, the hidden Stoneface Johnson show, we found that there are more hidden facts about that show.
Not hidden. Proud and loud facts.
From the Hidden Fortress. What the hell is it called again?
Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple, which everybody, in the 90s grew up loving, except for Esmeralda and Dan.
Wait till you hear about your boy Kirk Fogg, man. There's some stuff you're going
to
learn.
Very excited. Very excited. So we'll get to that and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can send your text there, too, at 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And on Facebook is the best way to stay connected to us. Like us, we're real close to the 12,000 fans. I think we're like maybe 120 or so away, 100 or so away from that. So like us right now so we can hit the 12,000 mark. And that is quite an accomplishment. We appreciate that. So we want 12,000 fans on our Facebook page. So like us now, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Monday morning movie reviews are here. And Colin is back and Eric is here. And we welcome the guys back. All right. So Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you? Well, no, actually, Eric. We'll start with Eric.
Yeah.
Eric, why don't you tell us about The Wave?
Okay. The Wave, also known as Nothing Wrong with This Norwegian. Would you like to plug anything, Nick?
Well, there's a movie coming out coming Tuesday that I will be screening called The Thing. Nothing Wrong with This Norwegian, biologically, anyway. I could actually recite the entire movie if you'd like.
No, that's fine.
I'm screening, and Eric and Colin, you guys going to be there?
I will.
I can't.
Okay, Colin can't, but Eric, you will be there.
Yeah, plan on it.
We're going to get to see John Carpenter's The Thing on the big screen, digitally remastered. It's going to be fantastic. It's this Tuesday, tomorrow night. Come on out, Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. We'll show The Thing on the big screen. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. And you can check out MovieCo.com to reserve your seats right now. MovieCo.com, that's MUVICO, Kurt Russell in John Carpenter's The Thing, one of the best science fiction horror movies ever made. And you guys would agree with this, that even 33 years later, or 32 years later, 34 years later, right.
Mm-hmm.
34 years, God, I can't believe that. 34 years later, that the effects in that movie hold up as well as any CGI that you'll see anywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just some of the best makeup effects you'll ever see. So when you see the movie, there are no computer effects in the film whatsoever. There's some matte work when you get to see the big alien ship. And you got to love that, old-fashioned matte work. You got to love that.
That's,
there's some of that, but no computerized stuff. All of the practical effects, the gore effects, the makeup effects, they're all real. Rob Bottin did it. It's a great movie, a scary movie, and one of my favorite Carpenter movies of all time. Is it, Eric, where does that rank on your Carpenter list?
I think it's actually my favorite.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And Colin, what about you?
definitely top five. I mean, I've a major soft spot and affection for Christine, I think, is actually my favorite.
Yeah.
And then Halloween and probably The Thing. I don't know. I'd have to look. I'd have to look.
But, oh, you know what? Before we dive into the movies, we're going to dive into The Wave, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. In a second. God, I totally forgot I wanted to talk about the 70mm Festival at the Music Box.
I was going
to
say, yeah. Did you get to see Starman?
I did not get to see Starman.
Me neither.
I didn't. I don't. I have no idea why they had an hour and a half break between Interstellar and Starman on Friday night.
I'm sure it's got something to do with taking those reels down and putting the reels up and threading and
I guess,
and
but
all that.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I couldn't stick around. I just couldn't. So I didn't get a chance to see Starman in 70mm, but I did see Interstellar, and I know that Colin, you went to see some of the shorts, right?
Yeah, I went to see. Well, I saw 2001, and I saw the shorts, and I saw Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
So,
and Eric, you went to. You were there for Interstellar. Did you go to?
I was there for Interstellar. Yeah.
Did you go to Lawrence?
No, okay. I didn't. Couldn't make it to Lawrence. I'm very upset about it.
Yeah. So just I got to see Lawrence of Arabia in 70mm at the McClure Court.
Yeah, I did too.
Which was just spectacular. So, and I saw 2001, and I've seen a lot of the ones that they're not a lot, but some of the bigger ones that they're showing. I had the. You know, I was lucky enough to have seen in 70 already.
Yeah.
But not Interstellar. I had never, you know, I didn't even know it existed. I love the fact that the tech guy came out before Interstellar and explained how they cobbled together the print.
Yeah.
From like a 35mm original that was blown up and using IMAX as well to put it together. And then he said that the sound didn't come, like at one point, what did he say, Eric, that the sound didn't show up? Like the track didn't show at one point?
Something like that, yeah.
And it had to be overnighted.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Insane. So I just want to say on a personal level, that was amazing to see. Well, first of all, Interstellar is just an incredible movie. It's an absolutely incredible movie. And to see it in that with that sound and that projection on 70mm was unbelievable. And I got to tell you, Eric, were you surprised by how many people were there?
Oh, yeah.
I
showed up. I mean, my mom and I brought my mom, who had never seen the movie before, and we showed up, I don't know, like 20 minutes before.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was like 400 people there.
I had no idea that it was going to be that big a draw.
Yeah, me neither.
No idea. So, I mean, I got there at about 20s. I got there when you got there.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of saw you outside, and when I walked in, I was like, oh my God, it's a madhouse in here.
Yep.
Now, what did your mom think?
Oh, loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it, yeah.
I was sobbing. That movie is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went on I will tell you this, Eric, you'll be proud.
Mm-hmm.
I went on a Nolan jag over the weekend.
Nice.
Because of Interstellar, I watched The Prestige again since the first time I saw it. And you remember I had a negative reaction to it.
Yep.
I still have issues with it, but it's a lot better than what I thought it was.
Yeah,
it's a much more interesting film than what I gave it credit for when it first came out. I don't know if I was in a pissy mood or what. I still have issues with it. I don't think it's a perfect movie. But
I'd be very happy to talk you through that movie.
But it's a good movie. It's better than I had given it original credit for. I watched Inception again. I went back and watched Memento, and I watched Insomnia. So the only one that I didn't watch, non Batman related, was Following, which I haven't seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
But remember liking. Nolan is great. I just don't understand why I don't like the Batman movies. And I've tried.
I know.
I've tried. I just don't like his Batman movies. But his other movies are great. They really are. I mean, so. Now, Colin, what about you? Tell us about the shorts that you saw.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I would. It doesn't surprise me that there are so many people at Interstellar because the shorts program was very well attended. I mean, I want to say, like, around 100, 150 people,
wow.
Which for a shorts program is pretty amazing.
Now, wait, I'm sorry. Are they showing it? Are they doing the shorts program again?
No, it was a one-time only thing with the Northwestern Film Society thing. I forgot what their name is, but I got it here. Northwest Chicago Film Society. They curated four short films, you know, made, you know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And then in between them, they played little movie trailers, you know, some pretty wonderful trailers from like Total Recall, Die Hard 2, Revenge of the Jedi.
Oh,
that was pretty faded and pink and, you know, but still Revenge of the Jedi. Yeah, it was just a really wonderful mix of you know, sort of weird short films. You know, they're made, most of them are like kind of documentary, or, you know, like one was a 20-minute, the first one they did was like this 20-minute Chrysler commercial, or, you know, Chrysler promotional thing.
Yeah.
That had an overture, if you can imagine that.
Oh, really?
I swear to God, no, it opened with a 5-minute overture for a 20-minute film.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then a film about the Chicago, the city of dreams. You know, it was like from 1983, so like all these beautiful aerial shots of Chicago from long time ago, and you could see that old Sun Times building, the ugly barge along the river, and you just go, I miss that ugly barge.
Yeah.
You know, I wish we could have that back. Instead of what's there now. So really a wonderful, wonderful program.
Oh, that's great.
Together.
That's really great.
Yeah.
All right. And Colin, then you saw 2001 and Lawrence, and how was that?
Oh, man. I mean, what can you say? I mean, 2001, I've seen it on the big screen before, and I've seen it, you know, on celluloid before, but it's just, you know, what the Music Box did with that screen, man, it's just so great that, it breaks my heart that they're going to take it down.
I know.
This week. And then Lawrence of Arabia, I was with a bunch of people who had never seen it before, and so that made it extra exciting for me.
Yeah.
I saw it at McClurg Court also. My dad took me when I was like 15, 16 years old, and it blew my mind. And it's always been one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a special experience to see that. Now, the 70mm Film Festival is continuing through, is it this week? Or
this Thursday, I think.
So the final showings are this week. But
yeah. I think Interstellar is the closing night film.
Yep.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I want to really quickly look up the rest of the schedule here so that we can tell people what to see. But if it's 70mm it's pretty special. You know, they're taking down the whole deal now?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. It was really nice to just be able to sit somewhere and not have to worry about, you know, somebody's head being in front of the screen.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's really nice to look up.
Okay, so where are we at? So tonight is West Side Story. Tomorrow is Lawrence of Arabia. Wednesday is Cleopatra. And then Thursday, there's a 2:00 matinee of Lawrence of Arabia. And then the closing night film is indeed Interstellar. And, you know, Eric, I think we can attest to the fact that people need to see Interstellar in 70mm.
Yep. And, agree with that.
It's such an incredible film. And, it's funny, when I was watching it, and it did come to mind the first couple of times I saw Interstellar in the theater. But, this, you know, obviously the first time seeing it, in 70, how much I did think of 2001 while watching it.
They're clear homages.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
Clearly Nolan loves that movie, and they're clear homages.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But it was just weird because, like, in that environment with that sound, watching it on 70mm, I was like, yeah, he likes the 2001, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that movie works on so many levels, man. It is... it's just an incredible piece of work, just really unbelievable, and it emotionally destroys me every time
yeah.
I see it. I'm a wreck. Who won score that year? It was
2014.
2014 would have been the Grand Budapest Hotel.
That won score?
I think it won.
Really?
Desplat won. I'm almost positive. Now, was Hans Zimmer nominated for that?
I think he was. I think it was only Interstellar was not nominated for like a couple awards,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah,
completely ridiculous. But I mean, that score is unbelievable. Hans Zimmer's score is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's unbelievable, and so is his score for Inception. Man, his score for Inception is incredible.
Yeah,
incredible. So anyway, all right. Well, that's a 70mm. You got a chance to see some other stuff for the remainder of the week in the closing night movie. Highly recommended. Thursday night, 8:00 is Interstellar. And again, come see The Thing. It's not in 70mm, but we are showing it on the big screen, digitally remastered, $10. Parking is free. Have some cocktails at 7:00 and some drinks and some food. And then the movie starts at 8:00, and I'll do a little talk afterwards. And I happen to know a little bit about the movie. So it'll be a fun.
I'm going to bring up a question, Nick. That's going to, I don't know if it's going to blow your mind, but just something that I thought about the last couple times I saw the movie on cable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, cool. I have no problem with that at all.
Okay.
So come see the thing Tuesday night. Okay. All right.
And you're right. Budapest did win best score.
Wow.
And Interstellar was nominated.
Yeah. It was. Okay.
Yeah.
What else was nominated, does it say?
The Imitation Game, Mr. Turner, and The Theory of Everything.
Ugh. That's not a good list.
What the hell?
Well, I mean, the score is weird. They seem to always get that one wrong. Like, five of my favorite scores from this year were not nominated. So,
what were your favorite scores, Colin?
Mad Max.
Yep.
It Follows. Creed. Brooklyn. And I can't remember the fifth one.
Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh my God. Those are great scores.
Yeah.
Those are great
scores. We're nominated.
Wow, that's insane. Well, I'm not complaining about.
I'm okay with Hateful Eight winning.
It's about time.
Wrong.
That, yeah. You know, it's about time that Morricone got one for actually, you know, for the work that he did on a specific movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, don't you think that's absolutely astounding that he had never won a competitive Academy Award before?
Yeah, when you say it out loud, it's kind of amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Hey, by the way, do you know who does the score for The Thing?
Hmm.
That's Ennio Morricone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oscar winner Ennio Morricone. Yeah, does a good portion of the score.
Yeah, right.
All right.
That was left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one part of the score that Carpenter didn't use, well, he used, there's a chunks of Morricone in it, and then Carpenter did, you know.
Yeah.
Like the main stuff in the movie.
Mm,
that's Carpenter. That's Carpenter. But if you go to the DVD menu board.
Yeah.
You get to hear the score. The piece of the score that wasn't used in The Thing, but was used in Hateful Eight during people vomiting blood.
Right.
It's fantastic. All right, guys, hang on. All right, we'll get to the new movies. I swear to God, hang on. All right, hold on a second. All right, Colin and Eric are here. We had to talk about the 70 Millimeter Festival. It's been great. The Music Box did an incredible job doing the 70 Millimeter Fest, and you still got a few days to go. And if you haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia, if you haven't seen Interstellar, West Side Story, great stuff in a special, special way to see it. All right, we'll take a break. We come back, and we'll get to the brand new movies right after this on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and it is Monday, which means a little bit later on my dad will tell a joke, because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. But right now, Eric and Colin, who's back, are here to review the new movies. All right, Eric, now tell us about The Wave.
Didn't I do that already?
No,
okay. Okay, well, this is a Norwegian disaster film, and it's set around this mountain pass in Norwegian. In Norway, and he's leaving, actually, right? He's like leaving his last couple days on the job, basically. So he's, you know, he's been in charge of this little group that monitors the mountain pass, and they've been starting to see anomalies that are suggesting that there's going to be an avalanche soon that's going to cause a giant tsunami along the way. It's going to cause a lot of devastation. So, you know, of course, you know, the bureaucrats are not listening to him. And he's warning everyone that this is going to happen. Everyone needs to prepare because there's not going to be a lot of time once the thing hits. So basically, the first 40 or so minutes of the film, you have the discovery of what's going to happen, the signs to look out for, and needless to say, his family is going to be somehow caught in the middle of it. Because his wife manages the hotel and the kids and skateboarding in the basement. And then the wave hits and all hell breaks loose and everyone has to survive the wave.
Mm.
Okay. So, you know, I start off by saying this is a Norwegian disaster film, but you couldn't really tell other than the subtitles, because it could very well just be an American disaster film, because it has pretty much all the telltale signs of your atypical disaster movie. And, you know, sometimes that works, even in America, and sometimes it doesn't. And I thought the setup of this movie works fairly well in the sort of the a slower burn than you're used to in American movies. You get all the telltale signs, and then they hit you with the big special effects, and you know you're on your way. It takes a little longer to get to that here, and that part mainly works. And then when you do get the big set piece of the wave, destroying everything in its wake, it's a pretty impressive visual effects sequence. But after that, it just kind of peters itself out. Everything after that is very much what you would sort of expect in a movie like this. And matter of fact, we had a movie last year called San Andreas that this movie is pretty lockstep with. And as the movie just kept going, and I found myself less and less interested about the survivors, and because there's not really a lot of characters other than his family that we're really supposed to really care about too much. So it's really just whether or not this geologist's family is going to survive. And after a while, I didn't really care much about that. And then it gets to a point where it's pretty much the entire climax of the movie is pretty much the exact same climax I had just seen a couple months earlier in San Andreas.
Wow.
I saw this movie at the Toronto Film Festival last year, so I was a few months removed from San Andreas, and I just wrote down, like, this is just San Andreas, just in Norwegian.
I see.
And I thought San Andreas was a little bit better.
Okay.
People can say, like, well, this is how, American disaster film should be. Well, that's because it is how American disaster films usually are. So there's nothing really special about
okay.
The wave.
All right, Colin, hang on, okay? We got a break. We'll come back and get your review of it. I have not seen it, but Colin has. Eric would not too crazy about it, and that's The Wave. And we'll get more from the guys after we take a break for the news, and then after the news, we'll get right back into it right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews continue. My dad will call in and tell a joke. We'll kick off your week here on 720 WGN, Nick DiGilio. All right, we'll get back to the movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter. Eric told us all about the Norwegian disaster film called The Wave. Not a fan. And now Colin will give us his thoughts. Colin?
I disagree. I like this movie more than I like San Andreas. I am a sucker for a good disaster film, and I like them even more when they stay a little bit more grounded in reality, and that's pretty hard to do for any disaster film, and I understand that. And this, might not be completely realistic, but, at least they're not giving me, bad guys to, root against and hope that a car falls on them like San Andreas does. At least The Rock isn't finding or the main character isn't finding, his loved ones in the middle of a skyscraper somewhere. San Andreas really pushed the limit for me. Not that it didn't have enjoyable moments in it, but I thought I liked The Wave more because it's just, there's a wave, there's a tsunami, and now we gotta solve this problem. They're not gonna throw another tsunami on top of it, and just keep building and building and building. And there's something charming, I think, about the Norwegians kind of going, how about instead of making a quirky comedy like we're known for, let's try our hand at a Hollywood disaster film. Let's make a Mark Wahlberg movie instead. And I thought they did a pretty good job. The characters were okay and not annoying. I was kind of along with it. Not a great film, but I love that there is a Hollywood blockbuster playing at the art houses that people will go see and think they're watching an art house film because it has subtitles, but it's like, no, you just got duped into summertime popcorn fair.
Right.
Nice try, so I'm okay with The Wave.
Okay.
I think it's all right.
All right, let me ask you guys this. Have you ever seen the movie Tidal Wave?
No, I have not.
Now, have you heard of it?
Yes.
Okay, Tidal Wave, Colin, you've never heard of Tidal Wave?
I don't think so.
Oh, good Lord, my friend. You need to find, I don't even know if it's available. I saw it in the theaters when it came out, like in the 70s, and it's a Japanese movie. It's a Japanese, that's exactly what you think it is. It's a Japanese disaster movie, and it came out in the 70s when the disaster movies were, everywhere. So it's this horrific, ridiculously stupid movie about a giant tidal wave, horrible special effects, and they Americanized it. In fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Joe Dante worked on the American version. I'm not kidding. I think he worked on editing the American version, if I'm not mistaken. So they did like an American version, not unlike Godzilla, you know? Whereas Godzilla, they added Raymond Burr, okay? Do you guys know who they added in the American version of the Japanese movie Tidal Wave?
The Vic Morrow?
No. It was a much bigger box office draw. It was
Michael Caine?
Lorne Greene. I'm not making this up. You guys, you have to see this movie. I don't even think it's available. I can look it up, and I'm assuming it's not available. But it came out, I want to say, 74, 75, something like that.
73. Well, the copyright is 73. It says May 75 in the U.S.
Okay, so there was 75. But, okay.
Yeah.
So they did a U.S. version of it, and they put Lorne Greene in it. It is hysterical. I saw the movie in the theater when I was 10 and knew it was stupid. And I've seen it a few times on television here and there. I have not seen it in decades. But the first movie that popped into my head when I read about this Norwegian movie was Tidal Wave. I remember my dad hating it so much. My dad was like, we saw it at the Luna Theater at Belmont and Cicero. My dad, when it was over, was like, that was the stupidest movie I've ever seen in my life, you know. And this was like after we had seen Airport and Airport 2 and all the other stuff.
Yeah, huh?
And it was, oh, God. And just you know, I don't know whose executive idea it was to say, yeah, let's put Lorne Greene in there. We'll get the bonanza crowd. So and the people who feed Alpo to their dogs will come out and see it. So anyway, if you get a chance, if you can find that movie anywhere, please do. All right, Colin. Now, Eric, you did not see Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
I have not, no.
Okay, Colin, tell us about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
All right. Well, this is Tina Fey. She plays a real-life reporter named Kim Baker, although I'm not sure this is directly – I'm not sure if Kim Baker is her name or not, if they were loosely based on it. So
It's based on her memoir. She actually worked here at the Trib. Her last name isn't Baker. They changed it for the movie. But it is based on her memoir, loosely. But in the movie, they make her a television reporter. Or she works as a television journalist. And in real life, she was a newspaper reporter.
Okay. Yeah. I meant to look that up before coming on. Okay. so anyway, she's a reporter embedded in Afghanistan and Pakistan for what was supposed to be a few months, but ended up being a few years. And she leaves her boyfriend in New York and ends up getting more involved in the war coverage and, you know, getting caught in the crossfire. Billy Bob Thornton plays a general who gives her orders and tips for survival. Margot Robbie plays a colleague she looks up to, and they become buddies in this whole thing. Martin Freeman plays another reporter who ends up being a sort of secondary love interest, and you can kind of see how that's going to play out. Then Alfred Molina plays an Afghan, I forgot what his role is. It's a political figure.
He's like a prime minister.
Prime minister, yeah. He pretty much knows everything that is happening in all areas of the landscape and even the personal lives of the reporters. And the movie is, you know, just kind of it feels kind of like an episodic film that just kind of meanders more than tells like a, you know, straight, you know, story or straight narrative. The problem with this movie, though, is the tone is all over the place. I mean, Tina Fey watching her in this film is, it feels like there's a kind of Jekyll and Hyde thing going on where she wants to be the 30 Rock Tina Fey and have all the, you know, the witty comebacks and reaction shots and everything. But then there's a side of her that wants to give a dramatic performance as well, especially later in the film. But even in the early stages of the film, when it's kind of going back and forth in between being a comedy and not, and it really doesn't work. I was never buying it. I really wasn't with her on this film as much as I wanted to be, because I think had she gone just a full dramatic performance, it would have been a lot more interesting, because she's certainly capable. But I don't know whose instincts got in the way of this. It's directed by two guys, and
it's the guys who did Crazy Stupid Love, the guys who did I Love You, Philip Morris.
Okay, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And their last movie, with their last movie was terrible. It was Focus was their last movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, these guys are, you know, they're good at, I mean, you know, Crazy Stupid Love is a wonderful film.
Yes, it is.
And but I think they have a hard time just kind of balancing the serious with the funny. And this is definitely a case of that where I wasn't, you know, where I wasn't really laughing that much, even when it was trying to be funny. But it just seemed like the wrong place and the wrong time to try and make a Tina Fey comedy out of, you know, the war in Afghanistan. It just had the wrong, it felt like just kind of a wrong-headed idea. And, you know, it's really too bad because there was a missed opportunity here for something. And I can't quite, you know, not sure if the comedy is the missed opportunity here. So, yeah. Not recommended.
I am with you 100%. I was just sitting here shaking my head up and down at everything you were saying. This is a very schizophrenic movie that does want to have its cake and eat it, too. It never is serious enough to focus on what could have been a serious exploration about what happens to these people when they go over there and they're in that kabubble, as they call it, where there's a lot of drugs, a lot of drinking. And, you know, like what happens to the people when they spend a significant amount of time in a war zone could make for a fascinating movie. This movie the screenplay was written by Robert Carlock. Robert Carlock is Tina Fey's writing and producing partner who has worked on The Unsinkable Molly, whatever the hell that thing is called with Kimmy Schmidt, and 30 Rock. And it feels like that, you know, like what you were saying, Colin. There are times when she's Liz Lemon, and then times when it looks like she wants to be, you know, to be taken seriously and have an edge to her. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work at all. A lot of the characters are very sitcomish. Christopher Abbott, who gave my favorite male performance last year, plays her fixer in this movie. And I also find it kind of a little bit disheartening that Alfred Molina and Christopher Abbott play, you know, Afghan characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's a little strange.
It's a little weird. I will say this. The one thing in the movie that I really thought was consistently good was Billy Bob Thornton. I thought Billy Bob Thornton completely steals this movie. I just was really disappointed with it. And it was all over the map. And like you, Colin, I just kind of sat there and went, I'm not on board for this at all. And it did sort of reek of sitcom. You know, like, you know, of sitcom easy way. Whenever it seemed to get kind of serious, immediately a Liz Lemon joke was thrown in.
Yeah.
And it's just not a very good movie. I was very, very, very disappointed with it. So, and Eric, are you going to try and catch up on it or are you just going to wait?
Not now.
Well, Colin, I believe we've done our job.
All right.
All right, cool. Hang on, Eric. Hang on, Colin. We got a break and then we'll come back. And we'll talk about the new Disney animated movie, Zootopia, which is going to be fun to talk about. Let me just say that. We'll take a quick break. Hi, welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Monday morning movie reviews continue. Eric Childress and Colin Suter is back. And again, we want to thank Jim Laskowski for filling in for Colin the past couple of months. Colin took some time off and only saw two movies during that time off. But now he's back and seeing the movies, and we're reviewing them for you. Eric Childress is here, and hello, Eric, and hello, Colin.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Eric, tell us about Zootopia.
Okay. This is the latest animated film from Disney, not Pixar, but Disney. And Zootopia is a place where animals have evolved to a point where they can basically live together, maybe not in complete harmony, but no one's taking out each other's throats because predator and prey have basically learned to live together. There are still laws. There are still petty larceny on the streets committed by some of the animals, but there's a general peace there. And one of the people or one of the animals looking to keep the peace is a little bunny rabbit, voiced by Jennifer Goodwin, who went to the Academy, and even though it is a bunny rabbit and not exactly in a female to boot, in stature or size with many of her male animal counterparts on the police force, she is nevertheless accepted into the police force because due to their new diversity program. very timely. And... So, but she doesn't really get the best gigs, cases in the world. So she's basically becomes a glorified meter maid. But she becomes the best meter maid in Zootopia and just writes as many tickets as she could possibly get. And then this leads her to a fox, voiced by Jason Bateman, who is one of the petty larcenists on the scene. And they eventually have to team up for a bigger case when they discovered that a number of animals in Zootopia have gone missing. And this leads them to sort of the back alleys and the crime bosses that rule Zootopia from behind the scenes. To find out exactly where what has happened to these animals and where exactly how this leads up to basically the ladder of power in Zootopia. So what you have here is basically a mystery with some shades of 48 Hours a little bit, and it's a really funny, really wonderful film, and people who saw the sloth trailers, the sloth trailer that were played before Star Wars in many cases, were pretty much instantly sold on this thing. And that sloth sequence is the funniest scene in the movie. But it's even funnier when you see the concept, the context of the movie, and exactly why the punchline of that scene is so funny. But you know, there's also this really sort of fascinating message or theme running throughout the film about the differences between predator and prey and how the predators are essentially stereotyped and profiled and labeled to an extent, and how the powers that be will use fear in order to sort of get what they want, and you know, on the other side they'll use diversity to sort of smooth out the corruption things that they've got going on in Zootopia. And it's this combination of mystery and comedy and social message that really comes together really quite nicely. This is sort of a really wonderful surprise. It's beautifully animated. The first sequence when you first see Zootopia for the first time, it's really kind of a really beautiful, glorious sequence. I think the voice work in this movie is really fantastic. Jennifer Goodwin is great. I didn't even know Jason Bateman did the Vox voice until the end credits. I think he does fantastic voice work. It's funny. It's actually a really good mystery. It has some exciting stuff in it, some really funny stuff along with the sloth stuff. This is one of the better films of the year so far.
All right, Colin, we're going to break in a couple of seconds here, but why don't you start with your thoughts, and then we'll come back, finish them up, and I'll give you my thoughts, okay?
Sure. I agree with Eric. This is a really terrific, really funny film, and I really appreciate that they really stuck through with the mystery aspect of it and carried through with it like, you know, with any other kind of film. It reminded me of Rango in that respect, and that it wasn't afraid to, you know, go to sort of the more grown up places of filmmaking and storytelling, you know, and give something, you know, for the younger viewers to really engage in and really try and figure out. I appreciate that, because a lot of animated movies wouldn't go that far for a young audience. And, you know, the voice characterizations are wonderful. Jennifer Goodwin is a really brilliant choice to play the bunny rabbit. And her and Jason Bateman, I think, have wonderful chemistry together. These two characters, I mean, it's great that there's so many possibilities for a franchise here. So I'd love to see these characters, in another film. It would be great. You know, just a lot of inspired choices. The sloth scene is much funnier in the context of the film than it was in the trailer. That trailer drove me nuts, I think. But honestly, I wasn't actually very sold on it. I had low expectations going into this film.
All right, hang on, Colin, hang on. Okay. I want you to finish your thoughts, and then I'll give you mine, and then we'll give you the box office. And Eric will stick around, and we'll do some box office talk as well. We got a break here, and we'll come back after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Every Monday morning, we give you the Monday morning movie reviews. When we talk about all the new movies, the latest things that are happening, we did go and let you know all about the 70 millimeter film festival. That is an amazing thing that's still happening through this week at the Music Box, and you should get out there and see some of the movies. If not, and we welcomed Colin back, and now we're in the middle of reviewing Disney's new animated movie Zootopia. Eric loved it, and Colin is in the middle of giving his positive thoughts as well. Go ahead, Colin. Continue.
No, I was just going to say, finish off by saying that the movie just genuinely surprised me because I had low expectations going in. Wasn't dreading it, just wasn't expecting it to be as fun and subversive and interesting and intelligent as it turned out to be. It's, great for kids and adults. I don't think anyone's going to be bored with this film. I think it's just one of those, one of those really terrific movies that, I can pretty much recommend to anybody, which is pretty rare.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I'm echoing everything that you guys said. I thought it was terrific. And I went in like you guys. I guess my expectations weren't all that high. I don't think the trailer was that great, except for the sloth. The sloth thing did kill me. Like when I saw the sloth character, I just laughed my ass off. Then, and you guys are absolutely right. Within the context of the movie, it's even funnier. But I just didn't expect it to be as socially interesting or conscious as it was. You know what I mean? Like I didn't walk in thinking I was going to get a message movie that would make me think. I didn't think that. But that's what it is. And you mentioned how beautiful the end. Now, did you guys see it in 3D? Because I did.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, Colin, you didn't.
No, it was not.
Okay. See, because I saw it in 3D, and it didn't make a difference, actually. I don't. So it's one of those deals where, and Eric, would you agree with me on this? You don't necessarily have to see it in 3D?
No, in fact, you should see it in 2D because the colors and scheme is so bright that you don't want the especially when you get to the sort of the Godfather type stuff in the movie.
It's
pretty dark.
Yeah. Well, it's very funny stuff, and you mentioned the voice talent in this is really great. It's beautifully animated. It is really intelligent, and it works on every level that it goes for. I did not expect it to be sort of as deep as it is, and I think the messages are kind of important, and I really think that, adults will love this movie regardless. I think kids will also really like it, and I think it might actually spawn some interesting conversations with you and your kids if you see it. Yeah, I really do. I think there are ideas and there are messages in this movie that could, start some really interesting conversations with you and your kids. So I thought this movie was terrific. Really, really terrific. And one of the biggest surprises of the early year. I absolutely agree with both of you guys. I thought it was great. So Zootopia, and boy, did it make some money over the weekend. And we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes. All right, Colin, before we let you go, I wanted to say welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And Eric, what do we got next week for all of us to review?
Next week, you have 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
Is next week. You have Sacha Baron Cohen's latest, The Brothers Grimsby.
Ugh.
You have, and you got this little Terrence Malick movie.
Yes, Night of Cups.
Yes.
Night of Cups. Okay.
Yes.
All right, so we got that next week. Colin, thank you, buddy.
All right.
Welcome back, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, there's Colin. And Eric, you stick around because we're going to talk about the box office right now, okay?
Okay.
All right, Zootopia, a movie we just reviewed. All three of us really loved it. Zootopia made $73.7 million. Was that expected?
I said it was going to do over 60. I thought it was going to do huge business just because Kung Fu Panda 3 has been the only thing out there in the marketplace for families, especially for kids recently. And Zootopia, I think the sloth trailer killed everywhere it went. I knew adults that were crazy about that trailer. So I'm not surprised at all that it was breaking records this weekend.
Okay. And London Has Fallen, $21.7 million. What's the budget for this thing?
$60 million.
Oh, that's not...
No, not terrible. Yeah. I mean, it's cheaper than the first one, which was like $70
million. Yeah.
Which is kind of smart, I guess. But it's interesting that, Focus... you hear Focus Features, and that's a studio that's normally associated with... art house type, small releases, Academy Award films like Brokeback Mountain and Atonement and things like that. And now they're getting into they're buying sequels from other defunct studios. Like last summer they had Insidious Chapter 3. Now they got London Has Fallen.
Yeah.
And these are like their two biggest opening weekends ever.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And what are we looking at? What did the first one make a lot of money? Obviously it made enough money for them to do a sequel.
Yeah, well, it was kind of weird because, in the U.S., it was considered a hit. It did $99 million in the U.S., surprisingly enough.
Jeez.
But it didn't, overseas, it only did, $62 million. So it wasn't, a huge international hit that would have thought would spawn a sequel. But apparently they thought it did well enough in the U.S. to do it, and I don't know.
How did it do compared to the other Let's Blow Up the White House movie?
White House Down was a gigantic bomb.
Oh, okay.
That summer. White House Down only did like 60, 65 million, I think. Mm. I think that one did better overseas. So I think that actually might have made more money overall, but yeah. that was like twice the budget of Olympus Has Fallen.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So White House Down was a huge bomb for Sony, and I don't know. I don't know if this one's going to end up making money. I don't think you're going to see a part three of this thing, but it's a very respectable opening weekend.
Okay. Number three is Deadpool, continues to make money, $16.4 million, bringing it up to $311 million total. This is obviously going to be a franchise.
Yeah, clearly. No, I mean, Deadpool 2, if it hasn't been officially announced yet, it will be shortly. Especially if Deadpool ends up making more money than Batman versus Superman, oh boy. I would not want to have a job at Warner Brothers.
I just have a really, really bad feeling about Batman versus Superman.
What tipped you off? That Man of Steel sucked?
Man of Steel sucked, and all the trailers, I mean...
Yeah.
It just looks horrible. I mean,
yeah, they should stop showing footage from it.
It's just, oh man, it just looks bad.
And
really
it's over
bad.
2.5 hours.
I know, man.
Yeah.
I mean, what in God's name? Why?
Because they have to get they're trying to get that Justice League thing. So they're instead of taking 6-7 movies like they did with the Avengers before they made that movie, they're putting it all into like two.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks awful. And you know who's going to take it on the chin, man, if this thing bombs? Affleck.
No pun intended.
Affleck, yeah. And I feel bad for the guy. You know what I mean? And he's going to be the target. They're absolutely going to go after him.
And that would be unfortunate. I actually kind of think the opposite. I think that Affleck might be the one that comes away unscathed.
I hope so.
From this thing, because I've actually, some advanced word has said that the best thing about the movie is Affleck.
Sure.
And the fact that they want him to direct his own Batman movie, and write and direct that, so that seems to be happening. And I don't know how if he fits into Justice League or how that whole universe works.
Yeah.
But from what I hear, I mean, Warner Brothers clearly wants to have a good relationship with Affleck, so I think they'll do everything they can to deflect criticism away from him.
Well, I mean, he made a movie
that fall on Snyder.
He made a movie that it should be.
Yeah,
he made a movie that won an Academy Award for Best Picture for Warner Brothers. So
that's right.
All right, number four, boy, oh boy, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, $7.6 million. That's got to be considered a real disappointment.
Yeah, well, it's a disappointment, yes, but on the other hand, it's already made more money than our brand is Crisis.
Oh boy,
and that's the movie that I was sort of comparing it to. In that, it seems like I said this last year when that movie and even The Walk came out, is that it seems like American audiences have no interest in non-American characters, and especially movies about characters that are dealing with social and political crisis outside of the U.S.
Mm.
You know, I mean, because this is not considered a war movie, really, per se.
Right.
So I don't think we care, frankly.
Yeah. Okay. It's also not very good.
There you go.
Number five, it's Gerard Butler filling up the box office here. Gods of Egypt with $5 million. Wow.
Filling up something.
Wow. $22.8 million total. Oh my God. Did Alex Proyas go to the Facebook and go nuts again this week?
I didn't see that. I didn't look up Alex Proyas' Facebook account. I know, he blamed film critics for the movie bombing last week.
Right.
You know. But, so this thing's going to barely make $30 million in the U.S., and that's less than a quarter of the budget.
Oh, man.
Not good.
That's bad.
Lionsgate is in some serious trouble.
Really?
Right now. Yeah, seriously, you have to think that because The Hunger Games is over, so they have no more Hunger Games, and the only thing they really have left of any sort of, blockbuster potential is this Divergent series thing. And
That also comes out next week.
In 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, 2 weeks. So that's coming out on the 18th, and that's only going to have 1 weekend to itself before Batman versus Superman hits. So I don't know. Lionsgate, they're probably hoping. And the thing is that this Divergent thing is also a split movie, like Harry Potter and Hunger Games.
Oh, it is?
And Twilight. Yeah. So we have part one of this third part that no one cares about, and then part two is going to be next summer. Of 2017.
What?
Yeah.
God.
Right. So you wait 15 months to see the conclusion of this crap.
That's crazy. Number six, Risen, $3.8 million. Number seven, Kung Fu Panda 3. Its total is $133 million. Is that the least of all three, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Number eight is The Revenant. Obviously, you know, got a little push because of the because of Leo winning the Academy Award. Eddie the Eagle. Oh, man. Wow. $10 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, not a huge budget. I think $23 million, I think, was the budget for this movie. So it's not huge. If it does money overseas, it won't be too bad. I mean, it's not Gods of Egypt. So
right. And then number 10 is The Witch, which is $2.5 million. I'm surprised it's in the top 10.
Hey, I think a lot of people were. I mean, the drop last week was very respectable, much better than I thought either of us thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And you get The Witch spend 3 weeks in the top 10 and made over $20 million. That's not bad on a $1 million investment.
That's true. Okay, so you success know? Then.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely a success.
Yeah.
I still stand by A24's decision to go wide. I think if they would have platformed this thing for three weeks, people would have forgotten about it, and it probably makes, maybe it's half this, if that.
All right. Well, then I guess, that is a cool message to send out to independent horror movies then.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. And I'm the only person in the world that liked Triple Nine.
Yep. I still don't get that.
I did, man. I liked it. It's a piece of it's a piece of trash, but I dug it.
It dropped, totally lit piece of trash.
I just wanted to mention this. It dropped 65.2%.
Yep. Right out of the top 10. Right out of the top 10.
I don't know why I find that so amusing, but I do.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Again, a small budgeted movie, only like $20 million. So it's not like a gigantic disaster for Open Road, but it's not a success.
All right, cool. So what's going to be, is Zootopia going to top again next week?
Well, I mean, I think so. I think the word of mouth is going to be very positive on it. They're not screening 10 Cloverfield Lane until later this week, so I think that's going to do fairly well of the new releases. That'll do well. I think the Coen film's going to bomb.
Okay.
Big. I have a feeling that that's going to be because they're not even they don't even have a screening set in Chicago for Brothers Grimsby.
Yeah, I mean it looks horrendous.
Yeah.
I mean it just looks unbelievable. The Red Band trailer almost made me puke.
Yeah, so I think that one's going to bomb. I think people will go see Cloverfield next week because there's just out of a curiosity factor. And but I think Zootopia, you're going to see that probably do in mid to high 30s.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's got legs. It really does.
Oh, yeah.
It's because it turned out to be so good.
It's so good, and it's got nothing. I mean, the next family movie that comes out is another Disney release, and that's the live-action Jungle Book movie.
Right, and that's in April. Right.
April 15th.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, man, we will talk to you next week. And you're going to be – when do you leave for South by Southwest?
On Friday.
Okay.
Friday, I leave for South by Southwest, and I'll be there for 6 days.
Cool. So we'll get reports from you live from South by Southwest. Are you seeing the Pee-wee movie?
No. I will not get to see the Pee-wee movie. It's actually going to be on Netflix on the 18th.
Oh, right. So we can review that the following week.
We can review it the following week.
Oh, right. Okay.
And they're actually not screening it until that Thursday.
Oh, okay.
So the night before.
That's all right. I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to watch it. That's,
right.
I mean, immediately, as soon as it's available on Netflix, I will be sitting in front of my screen watching it and
laugh.
So.
No, I will be, when I come back, I will see that.
Okay.
And anyway, speaking of film festivals, our Chicago Critics Film Festival, we will be doing our sneak preview this Wednesday on social media.
Oh, okay.
We will be announcing our first seven titles of this year's event at the Music Box, May 20th to the 26th.
May 20th to the 26th at the Music Box is the film festival, the Chicago Film Critics Film Festival. And so give the website real quick.
It's ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
Mm-hmm.
We'll post all the information there. And if you go to our Facebook account, our Facebook account is where we'll be announcing the films starting at 9 a.m., on Wednesday, we'll be doing like one film per hour.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Well, go to the Facebook page, and we'll have that linked up on our page as well. All right,
great.
Eric, have a great trip, and we'll talk to you next week. Okay, buddy?
Sounds good.
See you later.
Thanks.
All right, there's Eric Childress, and he will be giving us reports from the South by South Film Festival, South by Southwest Film Festival.